and I will, and I checked my email actually before I even checked my text messages. So my text messages were booming with all my friends saying, oh my gosh, they did it. They
so
did it.
Dominic so. Scott, the chancellor and the offices of the administration had originally said, this isn't about us taking it down. This is about the Mississippi flag having the Confederate flag within it. Are you moving on to the state flag removing the Confederate symbol in it?
Well, in the resolution, there was an amendment made that said that the students would pursue pressuring the state to change the Mississippi state flag. The issue with the flag is the Confederate emblem, and it is not the state flag itself. It's the current flag as it is.
Mm. How do you feel having started a revolution in Mississippi?
I feel like it doesn't stop here. I feel like we might be having some more conversations later on in the year because we have a lot of things planned. You know, Angela Davis, I believe it was Angela Davis, said that revolution isn't a one-time thing. So there's a lot of things going on our campus. There's a lot of issues. And, you know, I think it's so awesome that students have built power. I'm so wonderfully proud of what we've done.
Dominic Scott, we're going to have to leave it there today, but we'll be back talking to you on the campus of the University of Mississippi. Dominic Scott is the secretary of the local NAACP at the University of Mississippi. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll tour the many ways in which Americans refuse to see what's before their very eyes.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, a series sponsored by Northwest Film Center. October 2nd through November 5th are the dates. While cinema provides entertainment and escape for many committed filmmakers and viewers, it's a vital medium of engagement and a powerful tool for social action. Films in the series include 50 Feet from Syria, Dreamcatcher, No Land's Song, and We Come as Friends. Again, that's Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film from October 2nd to November 5th at the Northwest Film Center in the Whitzel Auditorium of the Portland Art Museum, located at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue here in Portland. More information about films and screening times can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Halloween Community Rally and the Spirit of Unity on Saturday, October 31st at Waterfront Park in Portland. In the Spirit of Unity will be a family-friendly rally to raise the minimum wage, defend workers' rights, demand renters' rights, and support immigrants' rights. There will be trick-or-treating, costume contests, games, prizes, and music by Portland hip-hop artists. Again, that's In the Spirit of Unity, a Halloween community rally on Saturday, October 31st from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Waterfront Park, just south of the Hawthorne Bridge in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Imperialism, Climate Crisis, and Struggle, an evening with Harsha Walia and Luz Rivera on Sunday, November 8th at 5 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Harsha and Luz will speak about their work and experiences cultivating fierce, loving, and sustainable communities of resistance within a transnational analysis of capitalism, settler colonialism, state building, and racialized empire, and how climate change threatens to or is already compounding the forces of state and corporate violence against which they struggle. Again, that's Imperialism, Climate Crisis, and Struggle, an evening with Harsha Walia and Luz Rivera on Sunday, November 8th at 5 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services. a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
Sign sitting there by the left turn line, flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him, the VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. A textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out. They closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack. Busted concrete and rusted tracks, empty storefronts around the square. There's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd's getting thinner each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof. Pay for a drink if you gotta have proof. Try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 7 1/4 will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore. Shirts in the Walmart store, just like the ones we made before. Except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin, or the shape of their eyes, or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away. Dreams all lily white and squeaky clean. They've never known want, they'll never know need. The shit don't stink, the kids won't bleed. The kids. Pay less tax, the working poor politics. They can join the Air Force or join the Corps if they can't make it here anymore. So that's how it is. That's what we got. If the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo, look us in the eye, call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the Great High Plains is done closed down, along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. And dust devils dance in the noonday heat, and there's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
Okay, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. That was Larry McMurtry's kid, grown-up man, sing a song from his Childish Things album, We Can't Make It Here Anymore. And that's our theme. That is it. I can't resist being a little dark-minded as I see the way things are crumbling and falling apart, and we're still in the Middle East and we're still in Afghanistan and it looks worse and worse, and we're now confronting the Russians. And I don't know what we need, what you need, what all of us need, and I really believe this ardently. As I look at the Bernie Sanders thing, I can't advocate a candidate. I wouldn't advocate a candidate for president. But as I look at his campaign and I notice the enormous support of people in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s and so on, and older folk as well, I realize that more and more people are recognizing the fact that we can't make it here anymore. And there's no reason for that. There's no reason for the money to be accruing at the top. Here's the facts. It's very simple. Beginning in the 1970s, up till the 1970s, I should say, American workers' wages kept rising. Employment going dipping up and down was still rising. The overall situation of ordinary people, what we used to call the working class, but now is called the middle class. I love that shift in language. In my youth, middle class meant people who had intellectual work, white-collar workers, people who were generally making higher wages than working people, even though working people were making very good wages through the strength and power of organized labor on the assembly lines throughout the United States. But everything has been shipped overseas, and the profit margin has gone to the 1% of the 1%. This continues. This has not been changed. Just today, I read in the New York Times that Obama, trying his best, to be fair, is negotiating with the insane Republicans to create a budget that can fly for another 2 years. In that budget, services are being cut for the poor, basically. Services are being cut for all kinds of needed things. Meanwhile, and this is so weird, we have an infrastructure that everybody acknowledges is crumbling. We have low interest rates. This is the time, logically, if Eisenhower, the Republican, were president, we know what would happen. We would build high-speed rail. In those days, it was the interstate highway system. We would be building high-speed rail. Like all the rest of the industrialized countries, we would build high-speed rail. We would repair the dams, and all of them, everywhere. And we saw that in the most recent flooding in the Carolinas. All the dams would be repaired. This is not undoable. This is jobs, high-paying jobs, good work for good people. All of that would be happening, financed by monies which right now go to war and the rich. It's really frustrating, and it's really annoying. We need a movement. We need every young person and every middle-aged person and every old person to be decrying the situation and demanding change. And we need a movement that isn't the Democrats and the Republicans as they currently are. Oh, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. In the end, it'll be the two. It'll be the crazy Republicans. Oh, the crazy Republicans, and the kind of reasonable Democrats. But they'll betray us, and we all know that. And that's the pattern we're going to be seeing, because without a struggle and change, a real revolution, we can't make it here anymore. And I want to hear from you. I want you to call me and say, no, this isn't true. Things are good. It's great. There's enormous opportunity. Climate change, don't worry. You know, the need for an infrastructure, so the bridges fall down. Don't worry. I need you to persuade me that I'm just wrongheaded about all this. Or, if you want, you could add to my doom, my gloom, my anger, my rage. You can do all that on KBOO. I'm Joe Uris. Abe isn't here. Abe Proctor is not here. 231-8187. I open the lines for you, for your commentary, for your ideas. And I would like to urge women in particular to call, because I suspect that the most damage that's being done right now is to ordinary working people. And within that set, the subset of women is a significant force.
I am hopeful about certain political changes that are suddenly appearing. You never know. There's a rule that I have, which is you never know when the tipping point occurs. And yet, I keep waiting. I keep taking deep breaths. I keep thinking about all that stuff. I see people in the streets, and I see people out on the highway, and I see people everywhere making demands but being ignored. I tune in foolishly to local television news, and it's so stupid. The pattern even on the national news is so stupid. Every show, every time, everywhere closes with a little human interest story. Oh, the doggy was lost, but it came home after 2 years. Oh, that's so sweet. You know, oh, here's a person who's severely autistic, but gosh, they're doing okay because, oh, everything's okay. Everything's always okay. I just don't think so. I believe that we have a mediocre improvement in healthcare with the what is now called Obamacare. That's a good thing, but it doesn't even begin to reach into the hearts and into the situations of ordinary people. Suddenly, because there's no controls, drug prices soar. Costs of emergency rooms, operating theaters, etc., soar. There's no controls. There's no limits. There's no reasonable, humane approach. And I get a little bit angry, you know? I get a little bit angry, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should just be patient. Maybe I should take a deep breath, suck it in, and appreciate the situation we're in. After all, we're relatively privileged. So I open this up for you, for a discussion, really, about the situation. And I didn't mention climate change enough. So let me mention climate change. Whoop. Okay, let's take calls. 231-8187. George, you're on the air.
Joe, I may have mentioned this before on your show, but a few years ago I was reading a book about social psychology, and I ran into this weird phrase they use, the fundamental attribution error. And by that they mean that when a lot of things happen in our society, I guess especially bad things, we look to an individual or some individuals and we blame them. This is what the social psychologists claim.
You mean like Bill Cosby is the cause of all the mistreatment of women or something like that?
Well, we blame him.
Yeah.
And if something goes wrong with corporations, we may blame a corporate team. But what we miss, the social psychologists say, is the contribution which two things make. One of them is the situation in which something occurs, which because of various factors in a situation like anonymity or wearing a uniform or being at work as the CEO or somebody else, affects the behavior. And then the other thing is the entire system within which situations arise. And I read this and I said, well, I don't know if this is... I don't know. So I thought, well, I'd ask you, and then the challenge to me is, okay, let's say we, just for purposes of exploring the idea, we say, well, let's give it a try and see how that would work. Let's look at the kind of things that are going on now, the economy, looking more and more anemic year by year, day by day almost. And do we say to ourselves, well, gee, I'm just not looking hard enough for a job, or, you know, or can we turn it around and do what the social psychologist might want us to do, say, well, how is this system contributing to our blaming ourselves, or doing things, or not getting jobs, or is this just a waste of time to try this thing out? So I leave it to you.
Well, that's an interesting, I mean, you're raising some really interesting points, and they're good points. I'm going to let you go.
Okay, good. And I'll turn and listen. That's great.
Yeah, that's cool. I thought about this, and I mean, you raised some really good points. There are a couple of things that are relevant. There's something called the error of attribution, where we assume that what, you know, let's put it this way. We assume that the authority that we are dished out all the time in the general media is somehow legitimate because it's there all the time and it's official. That's number one. Number two, we have a political class that essentially lies to us all the time for pragmatic reasons or for opportunistic reasons. We have an electoral process that more and more, particularly on the national level, becomes irrelevant. And that irrelevancy can be seen by what's happened to the Republican Party, which has simply gone to a base of ignorance, stupidity, and hyper-religiosity. And at the same time, people like Donald Trump, who knows nothing except how to make deals for real estate. As he says, he got very little money from his father at the beginning of his career, only $1 million. I mean, this kind of conversation, this kind of talk goes on all the time. We also have another candidate who is a very good neurosurgeon, I guess, on the Republican side, but doesn't believe in evolution, doesn't believe in science. He does believe in cutting people up and making them better, which I give him what's due him. But he's out of his mind in an intellectual sense. Those are the rising choices. Carly Fiorina, who's crazy and lies. Lies about things she says she's seen that she's never seen, about horrible cutting up of living babies. I mean, all kinds of stuff. All this stuff goes on. Nobody challenges it. Nobody says, well, that's just nonsense. That's that side. On the other side, what we really are seeing is a very interesting, much more interesting context and contest. Hillary Clinton, who I see as a neocon, and coming out of the tradition of her husband, who really messed the pooch, I can't say the F word, but messed the pooch up. And she's pretty much of the same stripe, but now kind of in denial around that. And Bernie Sanders, who amazingly stays a social Democrat, of course, espouses what is called these days socialism, and is running a campaign that really challenges the assumptions of the two centrist parties, one of which, as I say, has gone right and crazy. Now, all that's going on in the larger political context of the fact that working people can't make it here anymore, that it's really hard. Just this last week, Willamette Week had a story about a so-called young creative woman who finds herself unable to find affordable housing in Portland, Oregon. Well, right. There's no public housing. There's no affordability for working people, let alone creative people. It's an extremely difficult environment. And everybody's all joyful because of the new things. The new things like what's happened to Albina. Well, what happened to Albina was the destruction of the black community, the clearing of 33 blocks, and then the rebuilding of that area as an enclave for the so-called young creatives, i.e. people with middle to upper incomes. All of this is going on. All of it is something that is ignored in the central media. And all of it is something that's supposed to persuade us that we're so hip, we're so cool, we're so happening, and the restaurants are good. I want to hear from you, whether you have a perception that agrees with what I'm saying or disagrees. And I'm particularly interested, if it's at all possible, for women to talk up. Now, I know talk radio is a medium that tends to be dominated by men, and I appreciate that reality. I do want to hear from you. 231-8187. David, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am obviously not a woman, but I am not a white guy. I'm an Asian, born here.
Uh-huh.
And
we can't get, no one can make it here. But I disagree with you where you single out Republicans versus Democrats, because they're all the same. We've been in, Democrats have been in power for 8 years, and what has Obama done? He's created even more wars than the Republicans. And the reason why no one can make it here is because we spend all our money on wars overseas. If we stop doing that, there's going to be enough money for everyone around, for jobs, for social programs, for everything. But until we get all the current politicians, including Hillary Clinton, she went and invaded Libya, created ISIS. Her husband is a sexual predator. Oh, my God. We forget that he was the most powerful man in the country in world history. It can't find anything better to do than to predate on 20-year-old girls. I mean, I have a daughter. She is not mature at 20. She's gonna be prone to men like that. But the last thing I'll just say is, you know, there's only one candidate out there who is a dove. That's Rand Paul. Hillary Clinton will lead us to more war. I don't know what Bernie Sanders says, but he's not stumping for no more war. The only guy who is stumping for no more war is Rand Paul. And he comes under Republican, but he's more independent, and that's why he's not doing any good. But if people start listening to what he says, we'll get out of these wars and we'll have more money at home. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. It's interesting. I actually had some hope around Rand Paul, but he just totally, I saw his libertarian positions kind of collapse around his ambitions. So I don't know. But I appreciate the call. I want to hear from all of you out there. What I'm saying is we can't make it here anymore, and the money is accruing at the top, not news to most of you. And, of course, as the previous caller points out, war is eating it all up, and the military-industrial complex, about which we spent some time last week warning people about, you know, it's real, it's happening, and that's where the what jobs there are, that's where the jobs are. And it's obvious that we go from one potential disaster to another in a nuclear age, and it's very scary. And meanwhile, looming, as Naomi Klein says, is climate change, which really does potentially change everything. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Cheryl, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Joe. Good morning. I'm agreeing with the conversation of everyone here. I just wanted to say, I think we're socially conditioned, like you say, to believe we're too old to work and on and on and on. I'm 69, and I'm living at half the poverty level, which is $12,000, and they still want to cut, you know, Social Security, increase Medicare, but reduce, you know, we don't get an increase, and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking yesterday about something. Why do we keep building all these buildings? We'll take Portland for an example, and the Telecom Bridge, and all this stuff that we do, but yet our roads are falling apart, but we keep building buildings on the roads, and, you know, so the bridges are falling apart to get there. I mean, you know, the whole thing doesn't add up, and the people that with money that build all these buildings don't pay into the infrastructure, you know, to repair the sewers and the water and, you know, all these things that keep the system running. So the whole thing is nonsensical to me. I mean, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So that was my comment mainly that I thought about yesterday.
No, I appreciate your comment. We can explore some of those issues, but I'm going to get as many calls in as I can.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay, thank
sure.
you, Joe.
It is Talk Radio. This is KBOO, 90.7 your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe, unfortunately, is not here, so you're stuck with me. I'm Joe. I want to hear from you. What I'm essentially saying is it looks to me like ordinary people, ordinary working people, and I don't like the term middle class for working class people. The fact of the matter is if you work, whether or not you work with your hands or your mind, if you work, you're working class unless you got a whole bundle of money stashed away somewhere. So let's talk about it as a working class. The people of America are a working class, and they have seen their real wages decrease beginning in the 70s and the wealth of the 1% of the 1% increase. And it's a crime, and I want to call it what it is. It's a theft from the people themselves. 231-8187, I want to hear from you. John, you're on the air.
Hi, morning, Joe. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for attending this rather broad subject. I'd be interested in hearing your analysis using class as your fundamental lens for giving us a perception into what's happening to us. My personal, let me give you briefly my personal experiences.
Sure.
I'm a working single dad. I have student debt that I cannot possibly repay. I verge on homelessness just because I can't make enough money to actually make it in this society at the present time. It's not through an unwillingness to work. I'm working full time. It just, as we all know, it's becoming untenable in Portland for working people to be able to make a go.
Right. You can't make it here anymore.
Exactly. That's what's happening to me. I'm nailed down to Portland because of, split custody. So even though it would make sense for me to leave in an economic sense, I am physically have to stay. So I'm being ground down. And the stress of that is actually really tremendous. I was glad to hear you talk about the structural nature of where we try to see people as individuals that have individual responsibility for their actions and failing to take in the context in which those actions occur.
Mm-hmm.
I would urge people to do a little bit of research. Somebody who's really interesting is Robert Sapolsky. He's a Stanford professor. He's got lectures and stuff online. Robert Sapolsky, and his examination of primate behavior, in particular, what happens to those who are on the very low end of the hierarchy, and the stress and health outcomes associated with that, are quite significant. And it's the kind of thing that we are basically in essential denial about. As human beings, we want to assume that we are responsible for our own sense of agency. But if you are like I am at the bottom, working as hard as you can, doing the best that you can, and still just simply being ground down, and if you try to say, I'm down here, I feel a little bit like the Dr. Seuss, Horton Hears a Who, and I feel that that's the way for the 99%. I feel like we're Horton Hears a Who, where they're trying to boil that dust speck, and you want to say we're down here and we make a difference, and they can't hear us because we get blamed for the circumstances in which we exist, regardless of the extent to which they were entirely beyond our control. And as I'll stop myself here very shortly, let me say one other thing.
Sure.
The big thing that I see that I actually urge people to really think about is the lens through which things need to be looked at is class. All of the isms exist, sexism, racism, all of those different isms exist. I believe that identity politics, Chris Hedges actually mentions this as well, has been used as a divide and conquer mechanism. Gays have recently gotten the right to marry, and the first time that happened, I just burst out into tears because I was happy for that to happen. But that's not going to change the fundamental structure of our society. So while I entirely support basic equality for everybody, we have to be really careful that we don't separate ourselves into little enclaves of identification in which we go, well, now that I've gotten mine, I don't need to worry about the rest of the world, because class is the overriding structure that dominates what happens to us and creates the stresses that separate us. And when CEOs are making 300 times what the average worker makes, that the only way you can say it is that insanity will ensue. And I'll shut up now, and I'd like to hear your class analysis of the situation.
Well, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate your inviting me to comment. I want to take as many calls as possible, but I will say this. I believe that, when I was teaching in both sociology and American history, I would always ask the question in classes, invariably, I had a class on minorities, and I asked the question, does class trump race? And in the end, most people came to the conclusion that, yeah, there is enormous prejudice holding down persons of color, persons who are seen as different. But the fact of the matter is that money is what decides one's situation. Yeah. In the society. And I'm going to let you go, but I really think that it is important to understand that in America, we deny class. If you look at a country like France,
or like Sweden, or like what Bernie Sanders constantly refers to, which is Denmark. All of those countries are social democracies. They have capitalism, which is controlled, which is modified. And in addition to that, they have a social democracy, which means that healthcare, education, housing, a whole host of the necessities of life are supported by a tax system that takes from the rich, yes, but not so much. There's still plenty of rich, and gives to needy people, not the poor, but working people. This means that there's apartments available. This means that there's healthcare of high quality available. This means that the educational system is virtually free. As long as you can do the work, you can do the schooling. And when you get done with the schooling, you give back to society by producing valuable skills and helping other people in the society. And we don't have that. What we have is a very rough idea of how society should be. And if we look at our history going way back, I mean, look, we slaughtered the Native American people. And we enslaved African Americans, and we denied women their rights, and we denied people without property their rights. This is our beginning in this republic, and it didn't end, and it hasn't ended. And I think it's denial that feeds our tolerance for what goes on today. It used to be okay, you know, it was okay. You know, when I went to school, stupid things were said by teachers, and I just shoved them aside. When I was in grade school, I learned, for example, that while it was horrible to have slavery, African Americans could tolerate the sun better than Caucasians. What nonsense. So slavery wasn't so bad. What nonsense. I ran into a guy in the South when I was traveling there who argued, gee, you know, the actual caloric intake of African American slaves was higher than the average caloric intake of the working classes in the Midwest and the Northeast. Well, and I said to him, well, there's one thing that for sure is not the same, and that was that the working class had a modicum of freedom. And he didn't get it. We are a society that celebrates racism, that celebrates sexism, that celebrates a class-based system that is hard on ordinary people. And we blame the victim over and over again. And this all is a social control, a set of social control mechanisms that really leaves us in a very bad situation. What excites me right now is the rise of a social democratic movement, unexpectedly, from an old guy who is really challenging the status quo. Now, will he get the nomination of the Democratic Party? Yeah, who knows? Can he win the presidency? Well, he could, but I'm not sure he gets any further than where he is right now. Who is the dominant candidate of the Democrats? Well, it's Hillary Clinton, who is a neocon. Let's be clear. Her politics, no matter what she says recently, are basically very conservative and very much not interested in social democracy. So that's a problem. Meanwhile, the politicians we have are all either in denial or kind of fading into the background when it's issues of real class struggle. And there is a real class problem, and there is real class struggle. And most people don't identify as working class. We've invented a term called middle class to replace the working class. And I really want to hear from you on this. And you can all tell me I'm just, you know, too dark-headed, and it's going to be okay. 231-8187. One.
Joe.
How are you?
Hey, man. Have you read The Devil's Chessboard yet?
You know, that's interesting that you said that. I just bought it. I haven't read it.
That's great.
This is about the CIA, right?
Well,
and yeah. Alan Dulles.
Yeah. You were talking about the dark history of the United States. Uh-huh. Well, it didn't stop during the Civil War. After World War II, we exported lots of Nazis that we felt would be helpful against the Soviets. And, you know, the Cold War was planned before World War II was even ended.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Patton was saying things like, we should stop fighting the Germans and fight the Russians. Our real enemies are the communists. And he wasn't the only one that was thinking that. There were all sorts of people, including Alan Dulles, and they weren't outliers. They were the powerful ones. So read The Devil's Chessboard as quick as you can. It's a great book.
Okay.
Now, as far as making it, it's. I was a commercial photographer for almost 30 years. That industry is kaput.
Mm-hmm.
I published a book, and I started a publishing company. And being small at anything is incredibly difficult. But I'm not ready to say you can't make it anymore. But it is, it's set up for multinationals,
mm-hmm.
in all sorts of different ways. And the smaller you are, the steeper the hill. But basically, that's what I got. And I would agree with John about what he said, where you can't stop when your issue gets resolved.
That is actually a very good point. I do celebrate the liberation of sexual minorities, and I do celebrate the improvements in many people's lives, persons of color or other groups, other minorities. But I agree with you that's good stuff, but it's only the beginning of what has to change.
Right, and they have to remember other people were there helping them when they were trying to get what they needed to get, and they can't leave now. They got it. Everybody, whether it's labor unions or gay rights or Black Lives Matter, we're all in this together. It's the 99%. The only division that we need to look at right now is the 99% versus the 1%.
Well, I thank you for the comment, man, and let's see some other people. Maybe somebody will call up and say, you know, you're just full of it and it's really fine.
That's okay. They'd be wrong.
Okay, man. Thank you very much for the call. And I will mention again, The Devil's Chessboard, which I've only started to read, and I think is a really good book about Alan Dulles and the CIA. But right now, I need to do this. I need to tell you, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio features a talk from the archives of the late scholar Edward Said, a great scholar. He pushed the idea of Orientalism, which is to exotify and other create the peoples of the Middle East and of the Islamic faith, on culture and imperialism. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for this community radio station. Hey, if you're not a current member, you can become one by going to KBOO FM and clicking on Donate Today. It's really important to support the station. I just want to point out on my own that this is the only absolutely dedicated progressive radio station. And by the way, it has the best in music programming. So it's kind of cool. Needs your support. We hang on. We do well because of people just like you. 231-8187. We're talking about the class divide in our culture. We're talking about how you can't make it anymore here in America. 23, who we got? Michael, you're on the air.
Good morning.
How are you? I haven't heard from you in a bit.
No, it's true.
You're my favorite contrarian.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Okay, I have always thought that one of the big problems is that our economy is not configured to make use of the people we have here. I mean, right now, the problem is that if you're the kind of bright person who can learn to write code, for instance,
mm-hmm.
you can get a job hands down. You know, so many people need this skill, and there are so few people who can actually do this. So if we could just train up everybody to be able to write code, the world would be great, but you can't do that. You know, not that many people have the abilities and the desire to do something like that. So it's not really possible. So you have all these people who, for instance, aren't going to be able to write code. And what do? That, you know, all of a sudden, as things get more and more automated, there are more jobs for people who can write code and fewer jobs. You know, warehouses are robots now, for instance. So I think we should take a good inventory of the people we have in this country and say, okay, you know what? We've got, like, I don't know, 70% of people who can't write code, but they could do a great job in a warehouse. Maybe we shouldn't have robots doing all the warehouse jobs, because what are these people going to do, you know? So,
okay.
So, you know, I wish we would do something like that. And I think one of the reasons why we can't is that the left, which, you know, could be the source of an idea like that, comes up with ideas like, number one, comes up with ideas like high-speed rail. Why don't we have high-speed rail, which every other country in the world has? Well, we don't have high-speed rail like the countries in Europe do, because high-speed rail is not practical in a country this big. I mean, you got to lay down these rails, and that costs a lot of money. Meanwhile, an airplane can do it even faster than the light rail ever could. Light rail only works in small, dense corridors, like, you know, they have that Acela train in the Northeast. But there's no way high-speed light rail makes sense, you know, out in the middle of the country or even here on the West Coast. It's just too big. So what I see happening is that the left does two things. They propose impractical ideas that make people shake their heads and go, well, you know what, these guys don't know what they're talking about. And then the other thing is this sort of ingrained dislike of the United States that I heard you doing just now. Oh, we were based on slavery, we did this, we did that. Yeah, we had slavery here when a lot of the rest of the world also had slavery. Slavery goes way back before this country, and it's not just this country that did it. And if you go all the way back to where the slaves were coming from, who was selling the slaves to the slave ships that showed up? You know, people in Africa were just as complicit in slavery as people here were. But you just, you know, I just hear, oh, the United States is bad because of this, that, and the other thing. Well, you know, that turns off a whole bunch of people, including me, that think there were good things about this country, too.
Well, I like the Grand Canyon. Hey, listen, man, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to see what kind of response you get. Thanks a lot for the call. I do have to make a couple of comments. One of the things about slavery that's unique to the United States is how long it lasted and that it took a civil war to break it. I think that's really an important fact. And let us not forget that the end of slavery did not mean the end of the oppression of African Americans in this society, even today. So, you know, just to put that in perspective. The other thing, high-speed rail thing, look, the fact of the matter is transcontinental high-speed rail works. It works in Europe. It isn't a question of having to have dense corridors necessarily. Also, one of the things that we've discovered about all kinds of rail is that cities, population centers, businesses, housing all follow the path of those, just as the freeway system built the cities of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. All right, 231-8187. Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. I agree with everything you're saying about the toughness it is, and the thing that bugs me is how mean many of us are. And I'll just give you a quick example, then I'll get off here.
Okay.
I live in a rural area, talking to a guy who basically come from working class family, made it up a little bit into middle class, kind of a management of a boarding school. And there was a student there who was on a stipend, and he was talking about the mother, and she had a subsidy to send her child there, but they were having problems with the mother. He didn't go into the details, but basically the child is no longer there. The stipend was taken away, and his comment was, if you give people something for free, they become a thief.
A thief?
A thief. And this is reminiscent of a lot of the discussions in the 1870s, Reconstruction, which you were just talking about, end of slavery, and this whole debate about helping the freed men, and if you give them things, they're shiftless. And there's this continuous undertone of this mean, ugly attitude that a lot of us have, and it's in the rural areas as well as the cities, but a lot of us are just really dark people, and we just have this outlook that just, we can't shake it. I don't know what the deal is. It's a weird, weird thing. Anyway, that's all I got.
Well, thanks for the call. Yeah. I will say one thing about that. We have a culture of so-called individualism, which implies that every individual has equal opportunity, equal access, and should be able to make it equally, more or less, depending on their skills. That's a mythology. It's not really true. And more, it's not really true. If you go to college today and you're of ordinary means, your family has ordinary means, you will incur enormous debt.
That debt serves two purposes. It ties you down to that debt. It also makes sure that you can't take on progressive activity, progressive jobs that pay less, because you got to pay that debt. And that debt produces in you a very conservative mindset. That's not an accident. That's a structural thing. There's no reason why we couldn't have some of the things that are being advocated, and in all fairness, by Obama. Community college and university really should be free on, and based solely on merit, and the system can certainly absorb and use that labor. The other thing I didn't really touch upon is this notion that, you know, everyone should learn code. No. I don't think that the answer to all of our problems lies in some kind of computer-based society. In fact, if that were the case, it would scare me more than anything I could think of, except the oncoming destruction that climate change will bring to us all. 231-8187. I'm arguing you can't make it here anymore. What are we going to do about it? When are we going to do it? And how do we do it? Camillo?
Hi.
Hi.
I want to comment tangentially on the last two comments.
Sure.
And I think that they reflect something that's deeper beyond just the specifics. They generalize. What Larry is saying is that there are beliefs that govern our behavior that are very deep. And I think that is what we have to deal with, the so-called memes that have to overcome and be shown to be not only false, but to have been created as a means of propaganda by the ruling class and the power elite.
I think you're right. I think that's a good insight.
There are a few books that have really succeeded in accomplishing this and showing us the way to overcome these ideas with action. I mean, first, obviously, is The New Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that book, which is already over 5 years old, is starting to be reviewed by a lot of people and considered as something that we need to do something about. And now there's bipartisan movement to start making changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, for example, the Black Lives Matter movement is very powerful and very important in that context.
And now another book which explains the history of how the neoliberal movement has, in essence, created the conditions that have allowed the problems that this show is discussing to come about and made it so difficult for us to overcome them, was discussed by Kathleen Stevenson on Politically Speaking about 2-3 weeks ago. And I urge KBOO readers to go back and listen to the author. The name of the book is Disposable Futures, The Seduction of Violence in the Age of Spectacle, and it's by Henry Giroux and Brad Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathleen Stevenson had Brad Evans on for an hour in an interview that was really good. And this book just articulates very clearly how the neoliberal movement has accomplished this incredible degree of control through money, through manipulation of the media, through basically Orwellian tactics to make us think that, you know, we are the ones who are responsible, and if we're not producing, we can simply just be discarded.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, and I also want to mention just to our listeners, you know, I think a lot of this stuff is archived on our website, and I also think that it's really important to realize, and I'm gonna blow our own horn here. We are, unfortunately, the only voice on air in the region locally that does this work, and it's very important work. And I really believe that the class of people who are now being called the young creatives, I don't know how they're creative, but they are young, you know, are mystified, they're confused, they're lost in a world in which they perceive themselves as incredibly valuable and privileged, while in fact things are going to be becoming even more difficult for them. And I really, by the way, appreciate your call. So thank you very much.
Can I mention just one more book that accomplishes the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
And this also was featured on Democracy Now! On KBOO.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything.
Right.
And now there's a film of the book. Mm. And what she accomplishes in this is to show how our attitudes towards nature were created through essentially myth, as you point out, in the 19th century. And we were believed that we were in charge of nature. We were to conquer nature. We were to extract everything from nature. And now she points out nature is coming back to bite us.
Yeah, I think it's true. And I think it's a good book. I'm glad you mentioned it.
And the thing that it is really encouraging about this book is it demonstrates how we can resist this. And this is the key, resistance. All of these books point out how mobilizing, organizing, and resisting is what is necessary in order to overcome this. But first, you have to understand where all this misinformation and distortion comes from.
I very much agree with you, and I appreciate your call, man. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I want to point out that there is an ideological misconception that dominates the new right wing in America. That dominates the new right wing, which is the idea, and it has some kind of sourcing in the Bible, because it says in, I believe, Genesis, that human beings are in charge of the world. Well, no. No, sorry, not so. The world is in charge of the world, and the world does not have, I don't think, a consciousness. It just is, and it is what it does. I always liked, if you want to get into the religiosity of things, the notion from Exodus, where Moses asks the burning bush, the representation of Jehovah, who are you? What are you? And it says, I am. Yeah, right. That's as much as you're ever going to know about that, if you want to believe in that. But clearly, the situation of human beings on this planet is becoming more and more perilous. We're a recent species. We have a lot of skills, and many of them are turned toward, it turns out, increasing the destruction of things to the interest of a minority of us, and mythologizing in the direction that is extremely destructive. And I do see it in the current political struggles in the United States. Okay, let's hear from you. We can't make it anymore. Is that fair? 231-8187. Jack, are you on the air?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, man.
Okay. The adaptation is the way that humanity has survived for as long as it has done, and it's important to do that. Coexisting with nature is essential. Before we demonize modernization too much, you should consider what the average lifespan of humans was 100 years ago compared to what it is now. That's something to think about. And the last thing is, if you're looking for a political movement to align with, look at the Tax Wall Street Party. The heart of their premise is that Wall Street pays no taxes. Well, there are taxes on profits if you can get caught or whatever, but on turnover there's nothing. The proposition is, say, a nominal 1% tax on all transactions, mm-hmm. and that would generate huge amounts of of revenue to be used for infrastructure and so forth. Education, health, welfare, infrastructure, of course, after you've reined in the military-industrial complex. But nevertheless, they've got a plan, and it makes more sense than any other plan that I've seen anyone put forward.
Okay, say the name of the organization
Tax
again.
Tax Wall Street Party.
Okay.
That's pretty easy to remember, easy to find online, Tax Wall Street Party.
Okay.
Yeah, and their plan makes a lot of sense. And it's, again, it's not taxing the accumulated wealth or the income of the 1%. It's taxing the transactions that are in the number in the billions, mm-hmm. Regularly. I don't know if it's daily or weekly, but they're significant. number of transactions. The other effect that a transaction tax would have, and Bernie Sanders has actually talked about this, and some other...
You got to wind it up.
Yes, I'm almost done. It dampens the volatile, dangerous flash trading that is the result of code writers.
All right, great. That was entertaining. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. We have the best in public affairs and music, and we can use your money, so give us some. And hang in there. It's almost always good on KBOO.
Disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Be sure to be tuned in to KBOO Community Radio at 3 p.m. on Friday, October 30th for a very special edition of The Roots of Rock and Roll. After over 33 years, Steve Bricker is unfortunately stepping down as one of the show's hosts. But he's able to come down for a final show playing some of his favorite spooky tracks from the rock and roll era, and you won't want to miss it. So be sure to tune in at 3 p.m. on Friday, October 30th for this haunted farewell to Steve on the Roots of Rock and Roll.
The bushes gave a rustle, a mummy shuffled by. He was carrying the wolf man who was howling at the sky.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO.